We're here to talk really about Nexus, state taxation, how it applies to gaming, and also how it really applies to e-commerce. And last year at this time, he's checking, maybe he does not want to be here. I'm losing my crowd. Anyway, there was an interesting case, and I say interesting case because if this now becomes the standard, it will literally allow state protection for any industry whatsoever within their state and literally stop e-commerce from crossing borders. And the case is, and literally as I was preparing for this lecture, it just came down on August 23rd. So I would say it's fresh and right off the case. And it's the U.S. Court of Appeals, so it is a federal case. It's not a state case. In Powers versus Harris. Now, Powers versus Harris is an interesting case, and there is a case identical to it in a different federal district that came to a totally contrary position, which supported e-commerce and supported interstate transaction. Powers basically was a gentleman that sold caskets. You know, a nice little funeral director selling caskets. And in the state that he's in, they have a statute that says anyone that wants to sell caskets has to be licensed by the state and pay a $10 fee. And this was to pretty much, it's been there well before e-commerce and before you would cross state lines. It was just a way to get some money. Harris is a person that was in the next state. And he went online and he was selling caskets at a discounted price. Powers took him to court. And because they were in two different states, you had conflicting jurisdiction. You weren't in one state, conflicting jurisdiction. So the state court said, well, you know what? Federal state court said, state law can stand. It's not discriminatory. It's not hurting commerce. It's not doing anything. Went to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals said, we support this, even though every other court has basically stated that internet commerce, you cannot discriminate it at a state level. It is a federal aspect. It is discriminatory. It is against the articles of the Commerce Clause of the Bill of Rights. They said, no, the states can regulate it out. And they go through this great argument of due process, equal protection, privileges, immunities, e-commerce, and interstate. And pretty much the appeals court says, and we're doing this, even though pretty much all the law, all the statutes say, we can't do this, we're going to do this because we're going to create a conflict within two districts, which means that as soon as you get a conflict within two districts, it goes up to the Supreme Court. So this is why, if you erase everything. But the issue behind the whole thing, and I'll summarize it pretty much, is that the consequence is, and this gentleman wrote it very well, traditional brick and mortar businesses that have been threatened by competition from internet-based businesses have often obtained protection from state legislatures. This case supports that. That the state can now legislate and protect e-commerce. So in other words, since we'll take this to gaming to an extent, you can basically state that under gaming, because you're a subscription-based game and you're outside their state, that they can actually hit you with higher taxes to protect their people unless you're on their servers or in their state. It is probably one of the worst case histories I've ever read in my life. And I've read, unfortunately, quite a lot. So anyway, let's talk about e-commerce and the streamlined sales tax product and how it relates to gaming as well as any transaction. Last year at this time, the SSTP had not made the majority in regards to either states and or population. As of today, they have met both the requirements in regards to states, both the requirements in regard to population, And there are now two federal bills in front of Congress. One of the bills says that the states have the right to do this. One of the bills says the states do not have the right to do this. I've been told, this is shocking, I understand. The states are pushing and saying it's states' rights, we're allowed to do this, and the bill so supported is saying the same thing. It's now locked up in committee. The other bill basically prohibiting the states to do this is also locked up in committee. The advocates are missing the point of the bill, of what this will do. They're saying that this is states' rights, the states basically give the right of taxation, they can tax whatever they're doing. The issue they're missing is that they're taking a cornerstone within both the legal and accounting profession and taxation, and they're destroying the cornerstone. It always was that if you have a brick and mortar in a state, that's who gets the money, that's who gets the taxes. That means that if I basically took any company and I went across state lines, the other states can't tax me because everything's being run from my home office. This project basically says, no, that's wrong. You will now be taxed by the state. Now, this has already hit the software industry when the EU 2 years ago passed a directive that basically changed the definition where they stated downloading software is now taxable in whatever country you download to, the end consumer. We call it the end consumer issue. Whereas before it was if you were located in Redwood and you downloaded your software and charged for it, you didn't have to pay that tax. So the EU changed it first, and the states are trying to change it the second way. Now, some people that play online gaming and they basically connect to a European server now see this cute little thing called VAT tax attached to it. Because the server's overseas, therefore the EU is saying you must now charge VAT tax on the subscription prices. If you're selling software and you're doing downloading software, you must charge VAT tax. And there are only three areas, really. You have Europe, you have Asia, and you have the United States as a geographical marketing place. I had a great discussion with the gentleman that wrote part of the State Streamline Sales Tax Project, whose credentials were he was a partner with one of the remaining large CPA firms. He went into the lobby business, and he then helped write in regards to the audit provisions. And one of the problems with the audit provisions is, and we had a very long, interesting conversation, and I said, have you ever done a sales tax audit? Because you're giving all these great parameters, because we're talking about privacy, we're talking about taxation, we're talking about what the states can see on an audit. He said, no, I've never done an audit, but I know how an audit is done. And I said, great. Do you realize that the state is allowed to look at every transaction? He said, absolutely, but they can't get their names. I said, no, they're allowed the names of who you sell to. He said, well, they can't see how they get paid. I said, no, they're allowed to see if it was a check, a cash, or a credit card. Well, they can't look at the credit card data. I said, no, they're allowed to look at the credit card data. They're allowed to look at the check data, and cash is cash. And, you don't take photocopies of ones, fives, and tens, but, you take photocopies of the credit cards, you take photocopies of the checks. He said, well, you're wrong. That's not what the states are allowed to do. And I said, well, I've done maybe 2,000 state audits, and this is what they're allowed to do, and there are statutes allowing them to do this. And he said, well, that's a confidentiality issue. I said, yeah, and you didn't build it into your articles under the State Streamline Sales Tax Project. He said, well, no one ever told me that the states could do this. And I said, so you wrote this, and this is going to be law, and the federal government's going to piggyback on this, and you didn't know how it worked, and now pretty much you have confidentiality opening up and privilege information. He said, well, that's not a problem, because the agents that we have will protect you. I said, oh, so in other words, I'm not a Microsoft, so I'm not going to have this in-house. So So I'm going to be a level one small business. He said, that's right, we're going to protect you. I said, great, magnificent. And the requirements to be a level one person in a small business who will hire a third party outside consultant. And they said, yes, you got it. And I said, so therefore, I could literally hire one of these companies that use prison inmates to get all this information, and that would be perfect for you. That would meet your needs. And they said, yes. So I want felons, criminals, and all those people have all this great private information with client information, with company information, and you feel that this is protecting the privilege. He said, well, they'll be supervised. I said, you realize that in your requirements there is no supervision needed. He said, all right, well, what's your other issue? I said, how about if I'm a small software company and I hire this other company and I do not know that this other company actually is owned by my competitor. So I'm giving them all my sales data, all my marketing data, all my information whatsoever that is privileged and confidential, and you're basically telling me that that's okay. Well, nobody's going to do that. I said, if I can think about this in New Hampshire, I think somebody else who has a lot more money can do it just as well. His issue was, well, when that happens, we can regulate that out. I said, but why couldn't you regulate it out before it happens? His statement was, well, it's unimportant at this time. So we started to get into a further discussion. I said, well, what are you going to do about servers? He said, what do you want us to do about servers? And I said, well, you know, let's take online gaming. Online gaming is basically a subscription base. You're now telling me that, well, online gaming is going to be taxed in every state. He said, absolutely. I said, but, you know, this isn't the EU, which I got 20 different variations on a tax rate. I got over 350 taxing jurisdictions in the United States. He said, well, you just hire this level one. I said, no, I don't want to go back to my prison guys again. You know, we're not going to go there. He said, all right, so what's your issue? I said, so I got online gaming. We already are in a privacy issue anyway because of the information we have. I'm now giving that to a third party. They're going to attach sales tax to it. He said, and we're going to pay it to the right state, and this is going to get audited. He said, absolutely fine. I said, now, why is online gaming going to be taxed? Well, online gaming has multiple servers. It's not like one person plays on a server. It's multiple servers, each have about, I think the dynamics are 60,000 players per server. So if you have 200,000 subscriptions in the United States, you have at least, I think, well actually it's more because of backup and all and flux, a minimum of 4 to 6 servers available. So you have these great 6 servers going on. And he said, well, so you got 6 servers. I said, okay, I got my 6 servers, I got online, I'm doing this. But now, what happens if I do something contrary to what online gaming does, which is basically online gaming, they download a batch of data into your PC. I'm a PC player, so they download it to Mac and PDAs and everything. So that there's less in the gateway of you getting into the game. There's that encryption where you sign in and you put in your password and all. A lot of that software is really based in your machine. And it just then contacts the server on the online game. They talk, it gets handshake, we love you, and then you're on the game. So my statement was, you're catching me under the aspect of downloading software. Because some of my software embeds into the PC and is used constantly, that means that you guys can tax me. I said, what happens if I put all my data on my server? I said, I don't know if technology can be done, but what happens if that happens? I'm not downloading any information on your server. They're all hooking up to me on my server. He says, well, I guess then you wouldn't be taxed. I said, so, okay, so if I basically, maybe I have to, instead of 60,000, I go down to 40,000 because there's going to be a dynamic effect of loading more data onto my server. I don't have to pay taxes to anybody in the country. He said, yeah. I said, and what do you estimate the compliance cost is going to be to do this? He says, well, we estimate the compliance cost to be $200,000 to $300,000 per server. I said, $300,000 per server? So if I have between 4 to 6 servers, you just increased me $1.8 million. I said, don't you think that from a small business perspective, you now have created another barrier? You know, e-commerce is supposed to knock down barriers. No, well, you know, if you want to play in e-commerce, if you don't want to play in e-commerce, stay in your state. I said, I'm online gaming. New Hampshire has 3 million people. What kind of game am I going to have? He said, well, then it's just a cost that they're going to have to bear. I said, all right. I said, so let's get a little bit more funky here. I know that if I download anything to somebody else's server, I'm subject to sale. I'm going to be subject to sales or use tax in that state. I said, so if I basically download or somebody hits my server, they basically take the order form, put it on their server, on their machine, fill it out on their machine, kick it back to me, taxable transaction. Not a question. Absolutely taxable. So if I now take a person in Ohio who downloads my form from New York and I ship it out of California, who gets the money? Well, we know that, you know, Ohio's going to get the sales tax. You know, they'll get the sales tax under this. Believe it or not, New York gets a use tax. Because New York basically says, if you're basically using their servers in their state and you're doing business, this type of transaction where it will conform, then you're doing business in that state. And if I'm shipping out of California, well, then California gets, you know, the profit also. So I now have 3 states that I'm filing in. 3 different, unique, totally different tax issues. They're now all going to pay. You're now all going to pay. Last year at this time, Georgia did not belong to the SSTP. As of today, they do. They signed up for it. Digitally downloaded product now is subject to taxation in many states voluntarily. The states say, here is the law. But until the feds do something or until the Supreme Court does something, we would like you to voluntarily comply with the law and pay us our sales tax. Or use tax, because use tax is an interesting concept. It says, well, if I'm selling to a retailer or a customer, end use customer, that's a sales tax. But if I'm selling to a business, it's a use tax, because the business is using the product. It makes sense. You know, somebody's going to pay, and they want them to pay. So, and I should step back and say the SSTP was created because all the states at that time were running red. They were bleeding from lack of business and lack of business taxes. I'm happy to say that all the states now pretty much, except for California, are projecting, well, I'll take that back. All the Republican governor states are projecting a surplus in their budget. All the Democratic states are projecting a deficit in their budget. And California is just a deficit, period. I mean, you know, I don't think they're going to be seeing the light for a long time from now. So the issue is, here I am, and I'm going to start an e-business. What do I do? What do I got to look at? I know coming down the pike, the definition of nexus, the definition of who gets the ability to tax me, is going to be gone. As of today, it's going to be where you are, where your physical presence is, that's who gets the money. Within 2 years, most likely, it will be where I am shipping to, where my end user is, will at least get the sales and use tax. So So if I'm going to start an e-business, I better take a look at that now. I better start planning for that now. Can I handle the compliance costs? Compliance costs for a server, they're saying, is $300,000. I hate to tell you, but guess what? My statement to you is compliance costs for e-business is going to actually be between $100,000 to $300,000. Level one businesses, small businesses, are going to have to pay a fee to the poor guy that basically is going to be collecting the sales tax, who could be your major competitor. They are going to get a fee that's between 1% to 5%. So you have an additional cost that you're going to have to pass on. The issue is, how do I reduce this? First off, if you're in this, any state you're in, have your server in that state. It used to be last year that the server had to be a smart server. Smart server was a server that basically could complete a transaction. So you go on the server basically says, hi, what do you want? I want to buy this. I want to subscribe to this. I want to do this. And that server basically kicks out an acceptance, a confirmation number. That's a smart server. It does all the transactions within its operation. Italy was the first one that says we will tax smart servers. Even though it's contrary to the EU, we're going to tax them. The US has taken the position that we will not tax smart servers. Unfortunately, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, those great people called the OECD, and you now know what those stand for, used to take the physical establishment approach. Now they're taking the separate entity approach, and they consider a smart server a separate entity. They consider the consumer to be the end user, and the draft on e-commerce pretty much is going to conform to the EU status, which will be end user, you pay. So the first issue, where do you put your server? Put your server in the state you're in. You don't need a third-party jurisdiction sitting there saying, you're using my server, I want some profit, I want some taxes. Knock your compliance down that way. Second issue, as of right now, everything is voluntary, and this is for sales tax. I will go out on a line, in my own opinion, and tell you that when you get caught for sales tax, your next step is going to be that you're going to get caught with corporate income tax. The perfect example is the state of Minnesota. State of Minnesota says, if you sell in my state, and if you have an agent, not an employee, an agent, somebody that may be going around ready for an agent list? Somebody going around and maybe a con and basically sitting there, not a con, I'm talking about a convention here, not like an illegal con. Had to clarify that. I could see that one coming. So you're basically going out in a convention of some nature, you're selling your product, that is, you are an agent in their state. In Minnesota, that qualifies. So if you're going there to sell your product in this convention, you qualified. You tainted all your sales in that state. If you have an independent sales rep who is handling 80 or 90 different lines, and they walk into Minnesota and try and peddle your line, that is an agent in that state. You now have met the definition. You will now file in the state of Minnesota. So let's say, because we're going to go back to gaming, because that's how this was presented, I have a fan thing. Get a batch of fans in the state of Minnesota, a couple of my guys go out there, they set up the servers, we give a little lecture, tell them what the new developments are. Hi, how are you? Here's my next update. Well, and I'm based in Alabama. Guess what? I just now am paying taxes to the great state of Minnesota. Now, I'm picking on Minnesota because Minnesota was the first state that ever did this. There are now 8 other states that are doing this. All the states are getting on board. Canada has stated that if you go to a convention and you sell one item or one subscription, you have established Nexus and you will pay Canadian corporate tax in that state. This is a case that involved a German company. They came over, they went to a convention, they sat there, the president was there, he said, hi, how are you? He took 2 orders, he went back, Canada said, okay, any sales whatsoever are in our state. So what do we got to look out for all of a sudden? Now, a lot of the things that we've always used to promote our company, promote gaming, promote online gaming, these fans, these conventions, these tournaments, may actually now create that now I am paying both a sales tax to the in the states, as well as I'm going to end up and pay corporate tax. Only on the income you make on that state.
So this is just becoming crazy paperwork nightmare.
Well, that's the compliance cost problem. That's the compliance cost problem because you're sitting there and you're basically saying, okay, my compliance cost.
You convinced me. I'm not going to charge subscriptions.
Corporate tax forms in every country in the world.
A federal tax ID number and the ID number for every country.
You have to get a federal ID number. If you sell in the EU, you have to get a number for the EU.
Come on. Yeah. At this point, it's just
We're bringing the mammoth audience.
You pay taxes based on the federal.
No.
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 State.
You pay taxes based, you actually pay a federal tax, but the state has the right to tax each transaction differently. The state does not follow federal law. A perfect example of that is, right now the Internal Revenue Service, which is the federal government, has, it's up to the 2004 tax code. There are states that basically have stated that they will not, any new amendments from 2000-2001 will no longer be accepted to figure out your state taxes. So the states set up their own tax jurisdiction and laws and do not have to conform to the federal government. In fact, there is no state that now conforms at all because the federal government was sitting there passing tax laws to reduce tax rates. The states were sitting there saying, we're not going to accept this.
States are the
ones
enforcing taxation on e-commerce?
Yes. The states are the ones that
Attorney
are...
General.
The attorney generals are the ones that will sue you. Yeah. All right. But what will end up happening also is your competitors are going to sue you. Because if you take a look at the large game companies, they're in every state anyway. They're filing there. So to them, it's no big deal. You know, you go to a medium size or a startup one, you know, they're going to bring to the Attorney General's attention, excuse me, how come they're not paying while you're making me pay? I think that there's a lot of issues also with subsidiary issues. Rockstar owns a batch of software distribution stores. I can't remember if it's Electronic Boutique. I can't remember which one it is. They own a chain of them. I can't remember. Pretty much anybody that's basically on an online game, a Rockstar online game, which has a distribution house in that state, well, they got both a PE, they got a physical establishment in that state. Their distribution is still going through a Walmart, Electronic Boutique, that type of Electronic Arts, moving it through that way. So they now are selling product in that state of an online game capacity. So my question would be, how do you allocate based on this subscription disc? Because obviously the disc is, A, part of it's going to go to the distributor, the retailer. But I'm also have a component, because usually these discs say, okay, you buy this disc and I'll give you 2 months, 3 months free subscription. Well, the states, that's an advertising gimmick, but the states say, are going to go back and say, well, in the cost of the box, you have inherently covered your 3 months free subscription, so that's 3 months free subscription that we want money on too. To the online gamer, which may be totally separate from the parent distribution company. So the states basically, and by the way, the states give you their own federal ID numbers to track. So in regards to a digital download.
So actually, instead of applying for federal ID number, we should go to the state to get that number.
No, what you'll end up doing is you'll get a federal ID number and you'll get a state ID number. You still have to get a federal ID number because you're still a federal corporation, a U.S. corporation. So you need a federal ID number so the IRS can go after you.
Well, why don't they do it like the
mail order? That way, you know, you wouldn't pay any tax or shipping or tax unless you buy it in the state that you're selling it in or something like
well,
that.
Well, actually, this mail order was the beginning of e-commerce.
Yeah.
Okay. Mail order was supposed to destroy all the inherent businesses in that area, that venue. They said, oh, brick and mortar can't compete, we can't do that. Mail order is nice, but it isn't that big. SSTP basically makes mail order what mail order is used to doing is now not going to work anymore, because now the end user is going to be where the taxes are collected. So let's say you're based in Florida, where a lot of mail order companies are, and they get an order and they ship to pick a state. Okay, that state now gets the tax.
The state that the buyer is in?
That's right.
Is the one that's going to be taxing the transaction?
Yes. And it's gotten even more interesting because the question was, well, okay, how do you know where the buyer is? I mean, how do you know? How do you, I'm a company, I want to basically say, I want to pay my taxes. I don't like it. I don't like the cost, but I want to pay my taxes. Well, we're talking credit card. Now, PayPal basically doesn't really release that type of information, so you're going to have to create a whole new venue. And PayPal doesn't collect sales tax, you know, because that's your job, you the retailer or the gamer or whatever. So what will end up happening? So now you type in, you know, your customer gives you a credit card. But now what do you do? Let's say I got a credit card and I got a ship-to address. What happens if my ship-to address is different to my bill-to address?
Yeah. So you have to have the bill-to address.
You have to have the bill-to address.
Hmm.
Because you can't have a ship-to address. But even more of a problem is, if I'm near a state border now, I happen to live in Keene. So I'm about 10, 20 minutes away from Mass. I'm 10, 20 minutes away from Vermont. Couldn't I set up a P.O. box in a different state, which has a less taxing area? You know, it's 10, 20 minutes. I mean, it's not that big a commute. I can go over there. They're basically saying that, no, they're going to create a system to tie in the credit card to your domicile. So now all that information of where you really live versus your credit card, which could be a P.O. box, you know, it is allowed, legal, is now going to interconnect.
I'm not sure exactly how they can stop the whole P.O. box trick.
That you won't be allowed to take the credit card. Your credit card won't be allowed to go through.
Yeah, they have to have the zip code or whatever for the credit card.
Billing address.
Right.
Yeah. Some of them are asking for that now.
Yeah. And it's going to get more and more.
But you just change your billing address to the P.O. box in the state with the good sales tax and.
Well, actually, if you've noticed something, the U.S. Post Office is getting rid of P.O. Box. You know, it used to be if you were in a small town, you would just put your name and you would get a P.O. Box. Well, the U.S. Post Office is starting to go back into the rural, the RR1 routes again and talk about that and giving you a physical address. And by the way, credit cards are going to be required not to take P.O. boxes as a billing address.
So people have to get more creative.
Right. But the problem is, as they get more creative, yes. And by the way, I believe people are going to get creative.
It's going to be fun to watch.
And I believe that people will try and find ways around it. The problem is that 95% of your population isn't going to find a way around it. Because they're not going to want to spend the time. And now you have all this great confidential information, and now you have all this great compliance problems, now you have all this great taxes that are flooding into other states.
Are the rules concerning mail order the same as they've always been? Can I go out here and put a mail order web page up, and it would be different from a page where I have my shopping carts and all that?
When this gets passed by the federal government in some manner, shape, or form, it will not matter. You will both be taxed equally.
Yeah, it seems like this is going to affect mail order as much as anyone.
This will be... Mail order has been a burr in everybody's side.
For 50, 100 years.
Since the first one came out.
Sears and Roebuck in the right. 1800s.
And this is basically not going to be the death knell. This will not kill mail order. But this will basically... make them have to. This will put them on an equal playing field in regards to P.
One of the reasons they were able to bring down the price of the computer.
That's right.
Yeah.
The price will still be the same. It'll still go down. The only issue is now you're going to pay a sales tax on it. If you do enough of it, you're going to pay an income tax, which means the price has to go back up because obviously the company has to kind of grab the income tax. And who gets to absorb the compliance cost? Well, the consumer has to absorb the compliance costs because the company's saying, okay, I'm making X amount of dollars profit. What, you know, this got passed. I'm sorry it got passed, but this is pretty lousy. So from a small business perspective, this is terrible. From a large business who is pretty much in every state anyway, this is like cakewalk. This is a cakewalk to them. It's interesting that the SBA basically... there's a Security Exchange Commission Small Business Administration convention, and this has been brought up. This was brought up as an issue for 9 years straight. I happen to know that it's been brought up for 9 years straight because I'm on that. I'm an invited attendee of the convention, and I bring it up for 9 years straight. The last year, they told me that this is not an issue for small business, and to not bring it up again.
No, really?
Yeah. Don't bring it up. Not an issue.
That's a lot of small businesses have depended on mail order and that type of...
shopping carts. Take a look at the takeaway shopping carts. What do? You know? How many businesses are going to survive without shopping carts? Don't leave. Come back. We're cute and adorable. The dragon's cute and adorable. So, it's an issue... that you're going to have people that are putting up web pages, shopping carts. They're going to have to make sure...
Or just selling something off their web page. Some guy makes a T-shirt, sells it to someone in another state.
Right.
If
it's an end consumer, you basically have a sales tax.
So this will affect the published advertising for mail order as well.
Yes.
Of course, there's also another cost that's not going to be borne by the consumer or the... or the companies, which is the enforcement cost.
No, actually it is.
Well, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to enforce chasing down all those...
Oh, no, actually it's going to be very simple. Because if you're... And here's where it gets real simple. I respect your statement.
Right.
But here's where it gets simple. If you're a level one, you're going to have to either make a statement saying that you're going to police yourself or you're going to hire a third party to do it for you. So you're making a positive, affirmative statement to a state government saying, hi, how are you? I'm going to either police or you go over to that company and they'll police me. So what the fear is, or what will happen will, of course, be, hi, if you don't tell anybody, but you're going to have to tell your own state. And this is all going to be shared. So if you're in the state of Georgia, you contact the state of Georgia's Department of Revenue, and you say, hi, do I sell, you know, across state lines? Yes. Great. Now, and I'm going to police myself. State of Georgia takes that, and they put it into a master file. You're exposed. Now, your statement is, well, you know, I'm a small little guy. It doesn't take much. How many? This is like taking candy from a baby. This is like, they'll send an agent in and they'll just say, hi, we're going to audit you for the last 3 years. Please have with us all the state transactions you had, which, by the way, will tie into your state corporate return. So they have a filing on that. Now let's take a look at all the transactions that you took out of state, which you allocated out of state to reduce your own state corporate income tax. Now show us all your state filings. And you're going to sit there and say, well, I thought I would self-police, but I decided not to self-police. And they'll sit there and say, great, here's all the state. Here's all the state fines that you did. We're disallowing them. You now have to pay us all this back corporate tax. And by the way, we're notifying the states that you sell in. And they'll basically come in. But there is a caveat to that, that there is a provision in the SSTB that says any agent of one state is an agent for them all. Which means that if you got an agent, we're using Georgia here, the agent comes from Georgia, says, oh, you weren't collecting California sales tax. But under the SSTP, I'm a California agent now, so you now owe me all this back sales tax, and by the way, here's your penalties and interest on this. So enforcement isn't going to be the problem. The problem's going to be that your compliance costs are going to make you, all of a sudden, where you had a competitive edge, you're losing part of your competitive edge because you have to now comply.
Fully comply.
Well, you get caught. You know, there's gray, there's black, there's white. This one's pretty much, you know, not much gray in this one.
Flaming death.
Now, what I'm really looking forward to is there are a lot of companies overseas that have dealt with their own problems with the VAT tax, the value attributable tax. I'm looking forward to seeing them come over here and deal with our sales tax issues because they don't understand what we do here. We don't understand what they do there, but we can figure it out. They can't come over here and figure it out because it's very simple. Over there, you have a central government. The central government says, we're going to tax this, and we give you jurisdiction, you, the counties, the covenant, the cantons. We tell you what you're allowed to do, but you have to follow our rules and regulations. Over here, the states basically say, well, the feds say this, we say that, you say this, we say that. We don't have to listen to them. They definitely don't listen to us. And that's pretty much how our taxing system works. Can you picture a guy from England that's doing online gaming coming over here and all of a sudden having to do all these taxations? Can you picture a web page in England that all of a sudden has to now start collecting all these sales tax of, you know, it's not like 52 states. It's not 52 jurisdictions. We have 350 jurisdictions.
And so the IRS wouldn't actually enforce it. It would be the Attorney General's office.
Yes. Actually, it would be the commissioner to the Department of Revenue in your state.
So the players in this are the states and the federal government. There is no local. There is no push to get local sales taxes attached to anything.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Yes. No, if I led you down that road, I apologize. Okay, I apologize. The states basically, this is an SSTP, but the states basically say that if your jurisdiction has a local sales tax, then they fall under it. They fall under the state sales tax. Because when you pay a local sales tax and you as a business report it, you usually really report it to the state who then reallocates the money down to the locality. You know, as a business person, you know, you as a consumer, yes, you pay the sales tax directly to the restaurant if you have a beverage tax or something like that, but it gets reallocated back and forth. So the state basically considers local sales tax part of the SSTP. So if you're saying a perfect example would be like New York City doesn't have their own sales tax forms, they file with New York State, and then the state basically kicks back the money to the city. SSTP would cover everything. So if you were doing any type of transmission tangible product into that other state, into New York City, you will pay New York City sales tax.
In addition to New York State sales tax.
And New York State sales tax, of course.
And when, and doesn't that cause the effective number of jurisdictions to explode past that? I mean,
the you raise a very interesting issue. The effective areas.
350 jurisdictions is bad enough. If we deal with thousands.
It will probably. I would state to you that probably every locale will start piggybacking onto some type of sales tax of some nature.
Onto an existing one, or piggybacking their sales taxes onto the existing ones onto through the through the SSTP.
Right, through the. In other words, a perfect example. I know that in Massachusetts has a sales tax. The town of Winchendon, which is in the state of Massachusetts, does not have a sales tax. But I am sure that when this gets passed, Winchendon will pass a law saying that we're going to piggyback a 1% Winchendon sale, local sales tax on the state sales tax, which is legal in the state of Massachusetts. So you have all these little locales basically passing sales tax laws so that they can get into it also.
Tens of thousands of tax jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. But that's all managed by the state, but by the 350 state jurisdictions.
No, there are three, right. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. How do the jurisdictions break down? Where are the 350?
Well, certain states basically have one sales tax, and that's all that they're allowed. Certain states like New York have about, I think, like 40, because they basically say geographical areas,
they break it down. By county?
By county. Some are by county, some are by, I saw one that was really strange once where basically it was if you're on this side of a river, you have a sales tax, and if you're on the other side of the river, you have a different sales tax. There is no rhyme or reason other than a top-tier state sales tax issue.
But there's the possibility that more jurisdictions will essentially piggyback on the existing 350 and.
Oh, absolutely. I would say.
All right.
If this gets passed, I would say yes. I would say, and of course, and here's why the small guy can't handle this, is that every time a rate change comes, you have to correct all your computers and everything to change your rate.
It seems like there's the only ways to do this are if you're doing a small enough volume to do it by hand,
right,
and look it up, or you have a third-party company that does nothing but that.
Which is why they basically created level one suppliers. You'll end up having a small. Even looking it up by hand won't work, because, yeah. I mean, it is somewhat humorous. How many times do you get notice of something from a state, and then you go to their website, and it basically tells you the old law because they haven't posted the new law yet?
And if the Attorney General is corrupt, then any enforcement would be corrupt.
I would say that probably you're going to have corruption anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, well, not even corruption.
There's a lot of corruption in the Attorney General's
office. Right. I mean, there's not that much in the Commissioner's office, the Department of Revenue, though.
Yeah.
Which will be where 90% of these cases come about. But if they get really big, then the Attorney General does walk in. But I think that you're going to have issues of agents, people, that are going to be a little bit overzealous in how they administer the law. And I think that they're going to make interpretations that they don't understand. And they're going to basically harm a lot of businesses. And the problem that you have is if you're a small business, the cost of litigation is tremendous versus the cost of litigation for a big business is very small. You know, once a normal set. So if somebody walks in and says, hi, I mean, I had a perfect example with the state of New Jersey. They stopped one of my client's trucks from delivering goods that under the current law they're allowed to do, but because they're not registered as a corporation with the state of New Jersey, they froze the trucks at the border, told them that if you don't send us $3,000, we're going to basically keep your trucks here.
The Department of Revenue can do that.
And they're allowed to do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And basically we sat there and said, but, you know, this is illegal. And they sat there and said, this is what we're doing. You know, we are state troopers. This is what the Department of Revenue said.
And bringing suit would cost more than $3,000.
Exactly. You know, sue the state, and it's gonna. You're already talking $25,000-$30,000.
Welcome to Extortions Are Us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the state.
Yeah.
It's
state. Then you always have the thing of suing for damages from the lawsuit itself.
Actually, most states basically don't allow you to do that.
Yeah, so it's very hard to see. So it's very hard to sue the state. You can't sue the state for legal costs.
Right.
So the state.
Time to sell your business when that happens.
In a nutshell, the state has leverage with which to
coerce you.
To coerce.
Yes.
Which also impacts the probability there'll be a class action suit from small business owners should the SSTA become widespread.
It's hard to imagine it not at this point as part of what you're saying. Am I reading it correct?
I would say to you, when I talked about this last year, that we had a 50-50 chance that this was not going to happen. I now can say to you that we have a 80-20 chance that it's going to happen. And it's going to happen, I would say, within the next 4 to 5 years. Hmm. I mean, I think that they're going to pass the law, and then they're going to basically give transition period of 1 to 2 years, because they have no level one providers.
Is the legislation state or federal?
The SSTP is a state provider? Legislation.
Yes, yes, I do. I want to start a level one provider. How would I go about doing this, Pete?
I can see it now.
Let me answer his. The SSTP is a state project, state run. They've met all their requirements, and it is now in front of Congress to basically bless the SSTP. And there were, as I said in the beginning, there are two bills in front of Congress, one that says, yes, let's jump on this, and the other one that says, no, let's not do this. I personally believe that because the feds are looking at this as a non-issue, it's like it doesn't hurt us. And how do you, as a representative of a state, say, I shouldn't help my state collect money from somebody else's pocket? You know, it's not my consumer.
The electronic frontier should lobby the Congress not to pass it.
I've talked to their D.C. rep, and they have brought the attention. You know, you can't lobby say about taxation. What we've discussed is lobbying about the Constitution, confidentiality, privacy issues that the SSTP. Is just blatant about in a violation form, in my mind. And we have been attempting to work on that massive. But, you know, how do you say, hi, the states can't tax? It just doesn't make it.
There is a line of logic. It's the line of logic that everyone either wins or everyone either loses. That, yes, I'm taxing people from out of my state. This is good for my state. Mm-hmm. Except that everyone else is doing the same. You see, if everyone does it, then everyone has these problems. The realistic problem is the small business breakdown. Suddenly, you have to hit suddenly the critical mass with which you can make a profit with a business goes up. At least in terms of interstate commerce, local nothing locally changes that much.
Oh, actually it will.
How would it change a local transaction?
Well, a local transaction. Well, first of all, let me clarify something for you. There are 5 states right now that don't charge sales or use tax. They don't charge them at all. So any one of their residents are going to get clobbered because they're so used to going and buying product in their state. Okay. So there's that 5. Second is every state has a different rate. There are some states that have 2%. There are some states that go all the way up to 8.5-9% in sales tax. So you're going to have, you know, it's not an even playing field because you have rate differentials. But here's where your issue is with local. Right now, 90% of localities don't have sales tax. Doesn't exist. I mean, yes, okay. Philadelphia does. Boston does.
Major cities.
Major cities. Now, if this comes about,
they have incentive to do so.
I, as a locality, have incentive so I can pile on. What does that do to my local residents that aren't going on the internet but now have a local sales tax? Because the sales tax can't apply to just non-resident, non-residents, retailers. It has to apply to everyone. So you're in, you know, Johnsonville, you know, West Virginia, in one of the coal mine towns. And by the way, I don't know if Johnsonville does exist. Hopefully it doesn't.
We understand.
I'm not going to upset them.
It's theoretical.
It's a theoretical town.
There's this town in West Virginia. It's theoretical West Virginia.
Thank you. And they never had a local sales tax. Now, Johnsonville's saying, hey, everybody else is doing it. I'm going to do it too. I'm going to pick 2%. What the hell? It sounds like a good number. But they don't realize something. Now all their residents, all 125 of these people, now have to pay a residence sales tax to all their businesses that were in existence in that town to begin with. And that business now has a compliance issue, not that great, but now they have to basically have a form created for them by either locality or the state so that they can report the transaction to the locality or state.
In addition to the federal transaction cost.
And pay the state that.
And God forbid if they ship anything over state borders.
Right. So all of a sudden, then they...
Actually, that's an interesting question.
Go ahead.
Would this also logically apply in turn to intrastate commerce? You are shipping from one county to another with a different sales tax.
Well, it always applied anyway.
Okay.
That was always in existence. That if you're in one state and you ship to a different area, you have to pay the sales tax. You have to collect the sales tax. Assuming it's a transaction that generates a sales tax.
Okay.
Which this is pretty much going to put a lot. You know, e-commerce is really business to business. That's where the big money is. And use tax is business to business.
I think he was trying to go for different localities. Like, say, locality A and locality B have different sales tax.
But they're in the same state.
They're in the same state. They would pay the overall Georgia sales tax.
Yeah, right. If it's now, California, but California has more than one
region. So you have to actually charge a different sales tax in a different region of the same state.
Absolutely.
So, back to my question.
By the way, before this got passed, I had a full head of hair. for you on the tape, I'm balding now.
So, how do we, as a group, Pete, make these level one service providers so that we can all make money off of this? Because it seems like all this money is just, you know, creating unnecessary regulation groups. Real good cheap labor, huh?
Well,
question mark.
Well,
prisons. There we go. Let's go with prisons.
No. Actually, what I would go for is, first of all, to clarify, the SSTP does have a website. It is...
IHateYouAll.com.
No. Okay.
Thank you, Small Business Commission.
Boy, it's at www.streamlinedsalestax.org.
STREAMLINED.
Don't forget the D or you won't find it. And they have RFDs, requests for RFPs, requests for proposals. Fill it out. They're going to send it. And you can sign up to be your first very own level one ISP person.
Ooh.
And then you can sit there and say, come on, sales tax. Because you'll create a business.
And you'll make a billion.
Question. There was
actually your sales tax form would be absolutely interesting. At least you use yourself as a test case.
Mm-hmm. Question: there was a. It's not really similar because it's an entirely different aspect to the small business. But there was a move by banks to become part of more integrated as sellers and buyers of real estate property. Now,
yes.
Yeah, there was a move by the banks, and this was stopped because that would effectively drive realtors, the brokers, and the agents out of business.
No, that's not why it got stopped.
Really? Why did it get stopped then?
It got stopped because the FDIC stated that there is a conflict of interest for a bank to basically hold real estate which it could have a mortgage on and buy and sell it. Mm-hmm. And that it would be it would be in violation of the laws, and therefore they basically stopped it. Because basically, if the bank would sit there and say, we have a mortgage, we have a foreclosure, we can get around the law and get around due process rules and regulations.
Okay.
So that's why real estate, in fact, there is a prohibition from banks owning real estate under, I think it's the FDIC Act.
Yeah.
I think 96, 98.
Yeah, I understood that. It was just I was made aware of this only recently, that they were trying to get rid of that prohibition.
Oh, they're trying to get rid of everything. I mean,
but that they were stopped for some reason, and was just wondering if you knew what that reason was.
That pretty much is the reason.
Okay,
you know, there would be no way to really regulate them out. I mean, I have a problem that banks now can own financial services.
Yeah.
Of course, if you take a look at the last trust fund hedge, the trust funds that have been like Janus and those type of the mutual funds, I mean. You know, five of the banks got clobbered because basically they were doing. It wasn't illegal trading that they got clobbered on, but they stated they wouldn't do it, and they allowed it anyway. They're high-end investors to go time trading, which was, you know, you can play by the time. I think one of the funds basically let their high-end investors trade after the market got closed for that day's market. So, like, how do you lose? You know, but of course, I think the number was, I think like $20-30 billion was pulled out of these funds by the smaller people. The small people walk, you know, so thank God that helped.
Okay.
All right. So how do we get around this? I don't think we can get around this. Yeah. I think, though, that if you're going into a cut rate system, mm-hmm. I think you better start building in compliance costs. You don't want to be at the end of a business model without having to take this into account. Because I think what you'll end up doing is you're going to get clobbered.
Yeah.
You'll go out of business before you even start. And what this, I believe, will do is this will put, I would think this is going to put a damper on e-commerce.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're not in my state, I don't want to deal with you.
Yeah, you basically create 50. Yeah, you basically create 50 or 350 different little areas where a small business can do business.
That's right.
And then that's it. After that, then I start adding costs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only for when that business starts to grow.
That's assuming that the initial transaction costs from the sub-localities, if you will.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the federal law is very interesting. Federal law says that we'll allow the states to do it. This is the proposed law. But we're going to carve out that if you have under a certain amount of receipts, then this law doesn't apply to you. But the states are fighting that. And
yeah,
the compliance cost to prove that you're under this limit is insane. Because you're going to have to literally go out and go to every state that you're shipping in saying, We're exempt every month.
Yeah, that might work out in the sense that the one agent is the agent for all the states. So you have to prove it to this one guy.
No, that's the auditor coming to your door.
Yeah, that's the auditor.
That's the guy knocking your door saying, hi, how are you?
You owe us money.
You owe me money. This is more like you have to, I'm going to sell in every state. I got to tell every state I fall into this exemption.
Yeah.
But yippee. Then the state knows you. Because you told the state, you know, you fill out the form, I'm exempt. The state knows you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to go and comply.
Toe the line.
And then the state could be, then let's say you go to Minnesota and you say, hey, I'm going to be selling in your state, but I'm exempt from this sales tax. And they write back and say, hi, how are you? By the way, do you have an agent in our state? And you say, well, you know, I got this customer guy, he runs around, you know. He'll do something for me. Say, great. Don't pay sales tax. Pay income tax. It's the law.
And when all 50 have that, it's just going to be absolutely fun.
And all 50 are headed that way. Okay. All 50 are changing.
That?
Yeah, I'm seeing more and more. You know, people are basically have gotten rid of employees and gotten independent agents. And this is the state's way of bringing you back in.
Hmm. The good question that then presents itself is the future. Now, okay, 4 to 5 years, we're looking at the reinvention of modern taxation on at least in terms of sales and income taxes on the small level.
And right.
The question is, what then? I mean, there may be ways to streamline this, to make this reasonable. We may see...
Well, remember, it's called streamlined sales tax. Hmm.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. We're streamlined... We're
streamlining it right where streamlined basically means please open up your wallet.
Well, you're streamlining your wallet open, you know. Let's be fair.
Streamlining in this case, in fact, means pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to people so they can figure out what the heck, where the heck your money's going, and then pay more money to pay that.
Yes.
So the question is, what then?
Mm-hmm.
We're getting to a point here of the conversation where it's difficult to both to predict the legislation and the legislation that follows the legislation, which is almost impossible to predict because you're trying to assume where is the economy going to be at that point? Mm-hmm. How are people going to react? How is the legislation going to react? How long will that take?
Mm-hmm.
And this could work. It may happen. This all works reasonably well after things go haywire for a while, and then a radical reinvention of the system. But do you have any thoughts as to what happens after
things go apeshit?
More or less.
Okay, I think that things are going to break down very quickly. I think that the state legislations really don't know what's going to hit them. This was done to create money and not tax their own residents. Nobody thought that the other state's going to tax them. So what's the difference? Especially, God forbid, you have a higher rate on them. What I expect to see is a uniformity of rate. I do expect to see that the federal government, I think, will step in and create a federal sales tax.
The end effect of all this craziness will be a federal sales tax.
A federal sales tax.
And it'll simplify itself, or...
Well, no, what will happen is it will be a federal sales tax that will give a uniform rate, but only to the states that agree to basically get rid of their own sales tax and accept this sales tax.
Yeah.
So, well, I can see states not joining the federal sales tax and keeping their own rate.
But the federal government does have the power to override the states, on the one hand.
The federal government doesn't have the power.
Not with regard to taxes?
Interstate, between states, they can regulate it. Intrastate,
they can't do anything.
They can't do anything. And when I change what, if I give you a change of definition of what's in state to be not what is shipped out of my state, but what's shipped into my state as in-state commerce, which is why I talked about the Powers versus Harris Clause case, which pretty much said anything that comes into my state, this shouldn't even been tried in federal court, this should have been tried in state court. Because I, the state that has the end product, that's where I live. So federal government will be actually taken out of the mix.
No, they have been known to exceed the traditional bounds of the interstate commerce clause on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, e-commerce nobody understood.
Yeah.
You know, and there are cases that basically push e-commerce to be, to be really a federal jurisdiction issue. But a lot of states don't buy it.
So the clarification is that what we're looking at is a federal sales tax on interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
The local sales tax is its own business, but they can't charge that on an interstate transaction.
Right.
And then the
intrastate transaction.
On intrastate transaction.
Right.
It'll be weird, but it'll work out because it'll be okay. If it's out of state, you pay this, and if it's in state, you pay this.
But only if the state agrees.
Because
if the state doesn't agree to for a federal tax, you know, the federal government can't say we're creating a tax and you, the states, must obey us. The federal government says we're creating a tax and we would like you to drop this program.
But they can enforce the one on interstate.
Well, they can enforce it, but they
can't make the state buy in.
But they can't. So basically, you have a federal now tax, which you got your federal tax, and if the state doesn't agree to it, you also got the SSTP tax.
So
you'll have a double. Taxation.
I'm actually assuming that the SSTP is going to fail at some juncture.
No, it won't fail.
It may have systematically, but it will not go into effect.
It will go into effect systemically. It's going to be a pain in the royal, proverbial, but you can administer it. It's just that the compliance cost, what I call the cost of administering, is going to skyrocket beyond belief.
I was just thinking.
You can come on up. I mean, it's not like we have to.
We're playing past the mic here.
Come on.
I mean, it's inconvenient with this huge crowd and all, but we're working it out.
The thousands in the room. Thousands. I make the banquet look small.
About the federal not being able to force the states to buy in, they can give strong incentive, like how they got the national drinking age to be 21. Was to say that we'll cut your highway funding if you don't set a state law.
Sure.
So, I mean, they're not. Of course, every state said, okay, we want our highway funding.
Well, actually, I'll give you a better example because highway funding is one issue, but here's a better example. Federal government sets standards for education. Okay, and they said, if you don't buy into our standards, we're going to cut your education funding. Well, highway funding, they really gave money. Education funding, they really didn't give money. So there are a lot of states, one in particular, New Hampshire, I know about since I live there, so I know about that one, that basically told the feds, keep your money. We're not going to do our standards, have the additional cost to meet your standards, okay, then for what you gave us. New Hampshire figured out to meet their standards was going to cost maybe $5 million more than what they got in total on a good year. So they said, you know, to you. Drinking age, I can understand. You know, it made a lot of life easy. But it wasn't that much of a fight. The liquor companies, you know, are kind of scattered. You know, they don't have that much clout in one state. You know, And what are they going to sit there and say? I mean, from a publicity point of view, no, we want 18-year-olds to drink, not 21.
There is no good political angle on that.
Right. 21, they sit there and say, hey, 21. We liquor industry people say, yes, 21's a great time. You know, and mothers of drunk driving said, you know, the mad women, you know, and the liquor companies were all walking arm in arm. I thought that was one of the most humorous things. You know, I think spit was flying over from the women to hit the liquor people. And I respect that. You know, I think it's appropriate. I think that the federal government won't have the clout because what the feds are saying is we're going to create a sales tax to take away from you your sales tax. And the states are going to take a look and figure out economically based on retail usage, based on their how much money they think they're going to get versus how much they will. I mean, one of the perfect examples, New Hampshire doesn't have a sales tax. If a federal sales tax comes about, New Hampshire will get a piece of that pie because it's based on population. So all the high populous states will love this. All the low populous states or lower populous states are going to hate it. Yeah. So I can see a lot of states sitting there and saying, you got a federal tax, we're not buying in. You know, and I think that's really what we're looking at futuristically down the road.
Piecemeal taxes.
Piecemeal taxation.
There's no way to predict how that's going to break down.
Well, it's going to be, you know, systemically it's going to be a terrible issue. But, you know, you throw enough money at it, you're going to resolve it. The problem is small business is the one that's going to get clobbered by this.
Well, they got clobbered in the first round. You don't even know about the rounds after that.
No, they'll get clobbered every round.
Okay.
This is a guarantee.
Or it's going to be progressively larger businesses are going to get mugged up the line.
No. They won't get mugged up the line because pretty much larger and larger businesses are pretty much in every state.
Yeah, they're already.
What I was meaning by that was the first round, the SSIP, the smallest business gets knocked off, and then some not so small businesses. And we get to the medium sized ones after a while when the federal sales tax kicks in, and various states decide to continue implementing the federal sales tax on top of the regular sales tax on top of the local sales tax,
mm-hmm.
And so then we get in the middle kind of goes away, and then you're left with the big companies and your local deli if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you have is that you have a cost to the locals that's not being computed. your middle and your small business will be over there. They'll just basically, all of a sudden, you'll start seeing web pages that say, if you live in these, if you don't live in this state, don't even touch me. Because web business will be fine, but I'm not going to sell to you. Mm. I won't sell to you. Why should I suffer the problem? So I'll put a web page up because web page is a great distribution chain aspect. But I'm not going to sell. I'm going to put a giant footnote right on the thing. If you don't live in Georgia or Alabama, your order is automatically rejected. Period.
But then you have the local problem, the interjurisdictional local problem.
Well, if you sell from Georgia in Georgia, no matter where you sell, you're paying it anyway. I mean, that we've always had. That's a norm. I mean, if you're in California, in L.A., and you sell to somebody in San Francisco, and you're selling to a consumer, you're required to pick up the sales tax issue.
At the consumer end?
At the L.A. end.
Okay, so you're paying local sales. When you're in state, you pay local sales tax regardless of where you're selling.
But that's for digital downloading. If I take a tangible item like a T-shirt and I ship it intrastate, from L.A. to San Francisco, I pay San Francisco sales tax.
Okay, that's confusing.
So, but that's already there. That's in play.
Okay, that makes sense now. I'm thinking about those mostly in terms of tangible items.
Right. Well, if we get rid of electronic downloading, kiss that one goodbye. If we aren't talking about tangible downloading, tangible items. We'll use T-shirts just because.
Let's say you're selling a T-shirt. Let's say you're selling a T-shirt over the internet.
Great, I'm selling a T-shirt over the internet. Right now, if I'm selling a T-shirt over the internet,
You pay local sales tax.
You pay the sales tax, and I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's pick a why, and we'll state why. Well, or New Hampshire, but Florida is much better. They have warmer weather.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true.
Yeah. And there is no sales tax per se for this type of transaction. So if I ship out of Florida to any other state in the country, including Florida, assuming that I'm going into like Dade County, which I don't believe has a sales tax, there's no sales tax charged and or collected. Under the proposed laws, wherever I ship, there will be a sales tax. Now, if I'm in California, because there are California T-shirt companies, if I ship outside the state, tangible tax, I don't pay any sales tax. I don't pay sales tax to California, and I don't pay sales tax to the other states, assuming it's just a standalone company right now. But if I am in the state of California, LA, and I ship to San Francisco to an end user, a consumer, then I do pay a sales tax to California using the San Francisco tax rate.
Using the San Francisco, you have to use the local rate on the sale end?
Right.
On the consumer end.
Right.
Okay. So
that's where it's being delivered. If it's an in-state, intrastate transaction.
But an in-state transaction, you charge the sales tax at the
ship-to address.
At the ship-to address.
Yes.
So you still have to worry about, even if you're limiting yourself to in-state commerce, there's still an increased transaction cost.
Well, it's always been there, but you don't really care. I mean, it's always been there. You know how to get around it. I'm not dealing with 350 of them in one shot.
Dealing with a couple dozen at most.
At best, and easy software programming. And I'm only dealing with one state government. Yeah. Okay, which is really the big thing. I'm dealing with one state government, California, in our example. Versus, I'm going to be dealing with 52 state governments plus the state of Puerto Rico and the territory of Puerto Rico, the territory of the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Washington, D.C.
Maybe Guam, if you're lucky.
That's the Pacific. Yeah.
Question, would there be any difference in setting up 50 different franchises and just having 50 separate little companies with one giant parent company? It would be basically the same thing.
Well, what you've done is you've created where each franchise would handle that state's transactions.
Yeah.
First of all, a franchise by itself is you'd have to sell the franchise.
Well, yeah.
And so
I use franchise for the lack of a better term.
I could set up a subsidiary in every state.
Yeah.
And pretty much in every state, they would be the only ones handling that state transaction. That would only make me required. But what have I done? Let's talk about the ramifications of that for a second. Every state every one of these little branch offices or subsidiaries have to have labor. So whereas centralized management and centralized labor using web, which was a great incentive, a great way to reduce costs, was the redundancy. You've now created redundancy costs. Instead of renting one locale, now I'm renting in, assuming I don't own, 52 different states.
Yeah.
So I got rent costs, I got labor costs, I got insurance costs that were, if I was in one state, I wouldn't have the problem. And I'm still filing a sales tax return. I'm just filing in one state. And then you get the interesting part. So let's say now, obviously, the parent company wants some money. It'd be nice. You know, I got management in there, too. So I'm grabbing money from the locales. So can the state and the states have said, well, the money going up is not a deduction?
Oy.
Because we're not, you know, you're just really passing a distribution, a dividend up to the parent company. You know, they're not doing anything. Everything's down here at the local level.
Okay.
So all of a sudden now I have a higher income tax at my local level and I have an income tax at my headquarters level.
Yeah, and you're more double taxation.
And you got more double taxation issues.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out ways.
No, and I appreciate it. Believe me, I do not have
here's an idea.
The answers to resolve these problems. I don't. I wish I did. But I know that the problems are coming down. I know that small business is going to get pretty well clobbered. Okay. I think medium business is going to get problems.
It's currently 12:58. We have an hour and 23 minutes of stored data.
An hour and 23 minutes? We've talked for an hour. Holy hell. Like, almost all the other, you know, panels have been, like, short. You know, as in that there's extra time at the end. There's, like, been four panels that's completely – no, not even four panels. No. Not even four panels have completely used up the space. I like this. Between four guys, five guys, and one son who's been very quiet.
And it's a huge crowd.
Of course.
And I can only say that – well, as you can see, one of the guys basically was an online gamer that basically came in, and after halfway through the conversation, he stands up and walks out and says – I'm not going to use the subscription model. It's going to cost me too much.
Yeah.
Which is probably not bad thinking.
Right, but I don't know how he's going to get his money.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't use the subscription model, how do you get your money in online gaming?
eBay, well, no.
Yeah. Question, have we thought about... eBay?
Wait. When this passes, short the stock.
Oh, yeah.
Short the stock. Okay. This is my opinion. eBay is going to have... How about PayPal? Talk about...
Is PayPal
publicly
traded now?
PayPal...
I don't think it is.
No, it's not. It's by eBay. They were traded publicly.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
they
just short... don't short eBay. In fact, go long on eBay, all you internet downloaders out there.
Yeah, because... You're gonna see basically the compliance costs are going to be... I mean, first of all, eBay... is basically going to become a level one provider and charge another fee to regulate sales tax on an eBay transaction. So they're just going to up their fees, but first they're going to have a tremendous amount of people, because people won't understand why, oh, I went on eBay, I bought this, what is this tax? And what is this eBay, additional eBay fee?
And how much is it going to be?
And how much? Well, because by the way, there are recommendations on what you can charge, but no one's regulating what you can charge. So you can charge whatever you know,
right.
as one of these providers.
I got a stupid question for somebody coming in. For somebody coming in 3/4 of the way through this conversation.
He's been here for all the time. He's lying. No.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to get invited back next year. You got to picture this.
Yeah. Hey, I've been here the entire time. In fact, all three of me have been. and we're very interested and want to make sure that this panel is available to everybody year after year. But aside from that, have you guys discussed the value-added tax?
Tax, sure.
Yeah. The VAT.
Yeah.
It was the lead-in to
this whole thing. Yeah. And would that not be a way to scare off internet tax? If the feds believe that they're not going to lose their money, because that's obviously the VAT is more or less on the supplier end, not on the retailer end.
No.
Mostly.
No.
They changed
old law. No law. I'm sorry. You haven't been here. Let me give you a real quick recap. Yeah. Okay. About 2001, VAT, basically, we're talking about digital downloading.
Well, remember, I'm an educated economist, so I'm naive. It's a bunch of book learning to me. So,
and unfortunately, I'm an uneducated accountant. I'm really naive.
But you got practical knowledge.
But he knows everything.
Anyway,
2001, VAT rules changed for digital downloading and actually for supply, which basically it changed from the physical and the PE, mm-hmm. the physical establishment, it moved to the consumer, and they've now been implemented. So basically, if you're downloading, my example was, I'm in Redwood, which is Microsoft, but I use, and I call it Redwood. Yes, I know it's not really, it's Redmond.
It's okay.
And they download from their servers there in Washington State, and they download to France. What used to be a non-taxable transaction for their 1995 now is taxable, and they now must pay the French VAT tax. And that's also...
Are here for the MPAA?
Yeah.
That got canceled.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
It's interesting as hell, though.
Yeah, the person who is doing MPAA is currently in Florida, where
he has
a hurricane living next door. So that's what happened to MPAA.
No.
You're going to tell me you just got arrested and was...
No.
Yeah, that's why we're not currently talking about
it. Yeah, he's stuck in Folsom Prison.
Well, this affects me too. So,
in essence, the VAT tax, pretty much, you're under old law. New law is in effect. Regulations, what I call regulations, are country laws have been passed. Belgium is pretty much the country that has passed really the most detailed rules and regulations. And pretty much now it's changed.
Has there been any effect on interstate? Now, is what we're looking at in our country significantly more severe than that? What I'm trying to figure out is, has there already been an effect seen on interstate commerce in Europe?
Yes and no. Because you got to understand, it's not, and I say yes or no on this. First of all, Europe is now the EU.
Yes.
So therefore, anything that is done within the EU, okay, there are exemption codes for EU. This really only affects people that are non-EU, the change in law. This really affected all the non-EU people that were selling into the EU and not paying any type of VAT tax. Well, tariffs are different than VAT. You got to be careful. That's customs and duties versus value attributable tax. So, and how do you pay, humorously, if we talk about downloaded digital content, how do you pay a VAT tax on a tariff and duty on a digital content? I mean, it's the internet.
Right.
So, you're paying it on a signal.
Right, exactly. So the VAT tax basically got changed specifically for digital downloaded content. So that now if you digitally download anything, you now are required to pay VAT tax. The first online company that I know of that had multiple users was the Sony for online gaming. If you basically now tie into their European server, you now get hit with a what they call a service charge fee or VAT tax fee.
Is that a fee?
And by the way, they are more than happy to admit that it's a VAT tax. That it's digitally downloaded, it's a VAT tax.
But do you have to pay that on? Wouldn't you have to pay that on your end? Like if you connected from America to Europe, you wouldn't have to pay it.
No, because it's where the server is.
Oh, so it's
they have a secondary law. They call them smart servers. Remember, I talked about
smart servers
in Italy, right? Every one of those servers is a smart server because they can take a transaction, start the transaction, finish the transaction, and confirm the transaction without any interface with the home office or any human being, really. It's all electronic. So they can do everything. So that's a smart server. So wherever the servers are the ones that do it. I mean, literally, there was conversations of people saying, well, to hit Asia also, by the way, we're really the only major country that doesn't have a VAT. India finally has – India has been kind of like – the toe in, the toe out, the toe in. They have finally passed a law allowing VAT tax. They haven't implemented it yet, but at least they've actually said
they've committed.
It's there. We're going to pass it. We don't know when we're going to implement it, but we will at some point in time.
Okay. Do we need to wrap this up?
We've got another 20 minutes, 50.
Well, probably about the next panel is MPAA, and that was
yeah. We can go as long as you guys want to go. We've got about another 10, 12 minutes of storage.
I need a water.
Yeah.
All else is moot.
Okay.
It's true.
So, and the effect is, if you take a look at it, why there has been no effect on the law change is because everybody, you know, from a physical, tangible property point of view, you know, it's coming in anyway. Usually it goes to a distributor. There is no VAT tax per se. It's never going. And they basically sell it out. The other aspect is that it's not reciprocal. It's MPAA not like canceled. It's.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay. This is still the previous discussion. Thank you, though.
You can come stay. Try and find a seat in the crowded audience. But it isn't reciprocal yet because you don't have downloaded digital going out of Europe to the States and getting a tax. You know, so Europe is basically on a win-win, and Asia is on a win-win perspective here. Why? Because they're basically sitting there and saying, you know, we're getting all the stuff that was coming from the United States, we're now able to tax them, and everything that we're sending to the United States, we don't pay a tax.
So until we catch up and we tax them.
Once we catch up, they're going to freak out because whereas we deal with, we're entitled under the new VAT laws to pick a country. We being the United States going over there, we can pick a country, and that country basically, because they have conformity and uniformity rules, we pick one country, we file in that country, and it just goes all over the place. You know, they distribute themselves. Over here, we're going to have, when they come over here, they're going to file in 52 states, 350 taxing jurisdictions right now, and probably, you know, probably another 1,000 to 2,000 jurisdictions, which will make them scream. You know,
because even a foreign entity will have to submit federal sales tax in the American court.
Right. Well, no, they're going to remember it's a state tax issue, so they have
to submit with all the states.
They will have to submit. They will be hiring LL level one providers as defined under the state sales tax project. Submitting here.
And is the paperwork for all the states part of what the level one provider is going to be doing?
Yes. The level one will be basically filing every state.
Oh, you boy.
Yeah. Does anyone have to do that currently? Does anyone have to file in every state currently?
Businesses that do business here.
Actually, most businesses...
I would say that if you're a large business and you're doing business in every state, you have a physical presence of brick and mortar in every state, yes. You file in every state.
No small company has ever been forced to file in every existing jurisdiction.
Well, actually, that's not true anymore. What has happened is the state streamlined sales tax project has met their capacity, so now they request that you voluntarily comply with the law while they're waiting for the federal government to either bless it or don't bless it. I have been told that if they don't bless it, the federal government, that the states are going to take it to the Supreme Court and say that they're allowed to do this under states' rights. Well, the states give the right of taxation to the federal government. It's not the other way around here. So, therefore, the states are taking the position, we're just going to you as a, you know, a perfunctory thing. You know, you should pass this anyway because we're allowed to tax our own people.
So they're not taxing...
their own people. They're taxing somebody else's.
Well, what is it?
Everyone's taxing everyone else. It's the same effect.
Yeah.
How can you tax them? I hate when people nap during my lecture. The laws basically are being changed now. That before, what you're saying is totally true. And I'm not disputing that. And we're being very general and very broad. Okay. The law, you are basing everything on a cornerstone, whether you realize it or not, of physical establishment, which a lot of people you see call PE. Why? Because we like abbreviations. I have no idea. PE is being redefined as not brick and mortar. It's being redefined as end user. So if you live in whatever state you live in, and I'm in New Hampshire, okay, and I sell something to you, because right now, my brick and mortar is in New Hampshire, you know, you're a non-worry to me. Your state is a non-worry to me. You as a consumer is obviously a worry to me. But when I sell to you now with the new definitions coming about, I'm going to have to pay your state sales tax because they're changing where the transaction happens. It doesn't happen from my brick and mortar. It happens at your mailing address where you to get the goods delivered.
It's absolutely a tragedy of the common setup where if it were just one state that was doing it, it would be fine because, as they said, we're not passing anything ourselves, nobody else. It's the fact that there are 49 others for every one. And if they, when they all go...
Or 350 jurisdictions.
Yes.
Or 350,000 jurisdictions. If every local county and
it just blows up.
The setup.
Well, I mean, I get it. I see why. It makes sense. Obviously, you know, if we're dealing with... Obviously, for the state feels that it's going to lose all tax revenue if some, all, or most of commerce goes to mail order, internet, or what have you, and that's the first logical place to lay your revenue base. But seeing how well, and of course I'm now backtracking an hour and you guys are going round and round, but what is your best alternative to this? What is the best thing that you can think of that is fair to the state that does need its tax revenue, fair to the consumer, and fair to the business? Or does the state just not need the tax revenue and it needs to look for revenue elsewhere?
Well, it's a good question. I would like to say that the first issue is that I would state is that I think that the states are being very, very short-sighted. It's not that there's only e-commerce in one state. There's e-commerce in every state. So to say, you know, to look and say, well, you know, that e-commerce is better than my e-commerce, my statement is, well, support your own e-commerce in your state, grow your own e-commerce in your state, grow broadband in your state, make e-commerce cheaper in your state, and e-commerce will come to you. And it becomes a non-issue. I think that the states pretty much are, for 2 years, states have had tremendous deficits, tremendous bleeding. It's starting to turn around without this. This was created about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. When the states were bleeding, rupturing like you wouldn't believe. That stopped. The states are desperate. They're scared now. You know, it's like hindsight. You know, there were a lot of reasons why the states, you know, ruptured. You know, they were in massive surpluses for a long time. It was not the internet. It was not mail order. But what they did was they just really... They put in a lot. They never took the surplus. They basically, it was like a gambler's high.
Yeah.
Which is, they kept thinking, you know, we're going to be in surplus. And they went and did all these extra projects that never had to be done, spent all this money that never, you know, that literally were, they'll never get their money back. You know, and I'm not talking infrastructure. Infrastructure, I consider money well paid for. But I'm talking about there are projects where literally, I know New Hampshire, and I'm a New Hampshire resident, so it's like New Hampshire built 7 new state barracks. They didn't increase the state troopers. You know, that would have been fine, you know, more state troopers. But they built 7 new state barracks at a cost of maybe, I think it was $2 to $3 million per barracks, which are now 95% empty. You know, it wasn't like modernization. This is something that is common across every state line.
Well, there's the feeling among a lot of people in departments that if you don't spend the money when you've got it, it's never going to happen. So if you see a need for something 20 years down the road, you'll spend it. And then, of course, you know, that's farsighted, being crippled by the fact that you don't allow, look, if you buy too far ahead, things are going to change. You might not need it, or what you need will be...
Right.
Or what you get will be obsolete by the time you need it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm living in Alabama currently, and they went through exactly what you're describing. And I know that Alabama just will seize any kind of tax revenue it thinks it can, you know, it can get a hold of.
Yeah, but your state's even more humorous. Because I've been talking to the Alabama Department of Revenue in regards to game companies, and they have stated that they are more than happy to, by the way, while we want the money,
mm-hmm.
we will be more than happy to consider a game company eligible for the motion picture tax credits.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So.
You missed his tax credits talk.
That was yesterday.
Wonderful. Oh, my God.
So.
They're giving money away.
This was a two-part, you know, like Bill 1, Bill 2? Bill 1 was the states giveth.
Right.
Right, which was all the money that's available for businesses to go out and start up businesses and all that. Mm-hmm. This is part two. The states taketh
away.
Yeah, this is not a trilogy, unfortunately. I probably could have done much better now. And the federal government, this could be a trilogy, and then the feds step up and make a real mess of everything. I understand and appreciate. I think the issue is that because the taxing authority vests with the state, that there is no simple solution. The feds can't come in and impose a solution, though it was suggested they do have clout. And I don't, by the way, dispute that they have clout. I don't think they have enough clout for this. States are nervous. I think the easiest and the best solution would be to become tremendously small business pro. Most states are not. They're small business indifferent.
Oh, Alabama is absolutely small business hostile. If you're not a major automobile manufacturer, they don't care about you.
Okay. But you know, you're asking me for a solution. To me,
please fix everything.
You know, I wish I could. But
your job's secure, though.
Yeah. Oh, my job is so secure. You know, every new tax act they pass, every new state, you know, they have, you know, we keep calling them just the, I think we're up to accountant retirement fund, you know, act number 5. Because every time they pass something, it's like, you know, I get more business. It's a great thing, you know, because they make it more complex. You know, as soon as they say simplify, it's a guaranteed uptick in my business because it becomes more complex. And I think that's because pretty much the people that write the laws, and that was a different part of our discussion, really don't know how they're implemented. You know, and so they don't understand what they're opening up. But I would say if the states would do that, get into that type of issue of small business pro, e-commerce pro, simplify some of their own archaic laws that don't exist, that really are well gone, I would say that would be my solution than going through what I consider a major change in tax and legal, because they're changing. I mean, you know, we talked about a case where literally it was in federal court and the state was almost arguing we shouldn't be in federal court just because the other person's in another state doesn't mean anything. You know, which is why they went diverse for jurisdiction, which is why